You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America? The conspiracy theorists are going to go wild.
I'm sure they are. I don't know. I haven't seen the web.
Number 322.
Buckle your seatbelt. It's time for another episode of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, water filters, bug-out bags, and first aid kits. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your entire order at CampingSurvival.com. While you're at PrepperRecon.com, stop by the Prepper Recon Supply Store. We've got a great selection of Molly compression packs, hydration kits, and our new concealed carry tactical slings. All the packs and slings come with your choice of patch to let liberals know how you feel. We have some very cool Moulin Lay patches, Come and Take It patches, Sheepdog, Zombie Response Team, and matching U.S. flag patches. Of course, we still have our fully stocked Molly-compatible individual first aid kits as well. Just click the store tab at the top of the PrepperRecon.com homepage. Today's guest is Mike Leister from TacticalWoodGas.com. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for the invitation, and we're real happy to get the word out on what we're doing and basically try to help some people out with their energy needs.
Oh, absolutely. It's a fantastic product that you're offering. And, I just think it's great to have diversification no matter what you're doing, whether it's your wealth preservation. I think it's great to diversify into, raw land and silver and gold. And if we're talking about energy production, I think it's great to diversify into, solar. And I think wood gas is just, that's great because, it's something that, most folks in America have access to wood, so I think it's a fantastic thing that you're doing. Now, what initially got you into prepping?
Well, I guess a part of it is a little bit of DNA luck. I grew up wanting to camp all the time. It was, and I figured the scouts could give me that, and so that was a great start to it. But in high school, there was an unusual teacher that had a civics class, and he threw up, back in the old days, they didn't have computers. They just had these overhead projector things. And he threw up this chart of the national debt. And there's this little blip where it went down in 1950. And he says, well, but that looks good, but it didn't actually happen. It was some accounting gimmickry that happened at the time. And I looked at that and I said, well, I don't really want to be an economics guy necessarily, but I can look at that and I can say, that's going to end badly. If I ran my life that way, at some point it was going to blow up bad. And so I figured, well, I need to chart out a path where I'm making decisions, not, in a panic hurry, but, along the lines of, every decision needs to be made from the standpoint of what I learned to be the artificially high level of prosperity that we have here, the artificially high standard of living that's afforded to us by our dollar, which we're abusing into the ground, eventually that's going to go away. And so I need to, certain skills. I needed certain preparations in order to get myself ready for that.
Yeah, we've had hundreds of fiat currencies throughout time, and they always end badly. That's the one thing they all have in common.
Yeah, up to a certain point, up to about 2000, it was more about skills. And then as my career started to really pick up traction in engineering, I had the ability to spend money on preps and put certain things away. And I'd reached a point where, some pretty smart people that I was listening to were saying, hey, this economy, this housing bubble is really a bubble, and take a look at what subprime loans are and CDOs and all of these things. It's like, I didn't want to learn economics, but when a tidal wave is coming, you either learn how to swim, or you drown. So I learned enough of that to say, okay, I need to, go into high gear. And had reached a certain point of food storage and metals and defense and I basically, it's like all the big things that people panic and worry about. I went down my list and I looked at, my rotation. Everything was pretty solid. And I thought, really energy is my next thing to start worrying about. And something that kind of, when I was in the Marine Corps, I was in Camp Lejeune in the, gosh, it would have been the late 80s. And they had, unfortunately, some heavy metal toxic chemicals in the water. So the result years later was that diabetes raged up and bit me in the butt. And for a short time, I was on that insulin. And I looked at that and said, you know, without power, I'm going to die. How do I get something that's going to be more and more, make me immune to that to the degree that I can? Now, fortunately, I, you know, rigorous diet and you know, very strict things like that got me off the insulin. But I figured, you know, there's a lot of things that we take for granted. You know, a kilowatt hour of power, it, you know, is less than a buck. But look what it'll do for you. You know, look at the security it'll provide, look at the lighting, look at the, you know, everything that, that happens because of power. It's such a big deal to keep a, you know, basically to give you enough time to do other things that either you, you know, you enjoy more, or to, you know, in a really tough time, it, gives you a comfortable, relatively comfortable living when, you know, everyone around you is struggling to, just to eat. So that's what got us into alternative energy. And so we looked at it and what I like and what I recommend to everyone is start out with a, you know, a decent sized battery bank. In our case, you know, we, you know, me and my brother-in-law Kelly, who, he's my lead fabricator at the business here. We went with, you know, golf cart batteries, but, those 12 volt deep cycle, marine batteries, those are pretty handy. Plus, because you can use those as backups for your car. You know, if you have a much smaller disaster, which is, you know, you need to get to work and your battery's dead, you could just swap out one of those batteries. So anyway, we put together a battery bank with an inverter on it and went to our wives because we were both working remotely and said, if the freezer dies, you know, if the power dies, plug the freezer into this, turn this little switch on, because we didn't want them having to pull on cords and have, you know, the training of a startup sequence of a generator is more than we wanted to put on them during a power outage. So we started with that, and then we went to, hey, we want a generator that just puts out 12 volt, well, 13.8 volts and charges that directly and sips fuel. And then we looked at the amount of fuel we were storing. It's like, isn't there a better way to do this? You know, can we store a big, just a monster pig, a propane pig, and you know, have power that way? But eventually that runs out too. So we said, well, Old technology sometimes is the best for certain circumstances, and so we made a wood calf generator that is really, really clean, that'll charge your batteries, run your generator, and it's small and light. You're able to pick this thing up and bug out with it. It's not something you need a forklift to put onto a big trailer if you need to relocate. It's something that'll fit in, you know, it'll fit in my little jet of diesel when I'm running out to some of the local locations to do demonstrations.
It's time for a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proved to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on silver and gold. Check out silver.com today. Now, what has you worried regarding grid power?
Everything. There's so many things that put our power grid at risk. One thing is, you know, even with the smart, you know, the way they've divided up the parts of the national grid, it's a one big grid. You know, there's a political risk. So, you know, one of the things that one of the TV shows came out with well, about a year ago was that last winter we were one power grid away from the whole eastern seaboard having a blackout during the crazy cold weather that we had over there. Basically, if one of those power plants had gone out in the national grid, it would have shut that down, and people would have died. A lot of people would have died in that kind of cold weather with no way to heat themselves. And you add into that and that goes right into the political risk. We've got, you know, a political movement to shut down a lot of coal-fired power plants. Well, if we even just repeat last year's winter with one coal plant shut down, we're going to hit that scenario. We're going to hit the scenario where people are going to die because of no power. in extremely cold weather. And I think they're trying to shut down a lot of them. The next one is maintenance. You take a look. There's a program, it was on 5-6 years ago, that said, hey, take a look at the national transportation infrastructure. And they went and they basically surveyed the country and said, look at all these things that are about to fall apart. And that was about a year before that big bridge up in, was it Minneapolis, St. Paul, basically fell down. Up here in Washington on the west side, truck was loaded a little too high and it banged into the bridge, a metal bridge, and the whole thing sank. It basically fell straight into Snohomish River? Snohomish River. Anyway, bridges are falling into rivers just from maintenance, and I think the power grid's the same way. Companies will maintain things as best they can within their budgets, but there's a lot of stuff to maintain, and I think a lot of it is kept just barely maintained enough. And then the next thing is sabotage. The grid is strung across the whole country. You know, one guy with a rifle picking off insulators can cause a lot of trouble. They found that a group of three or four people had gone up above a substation and were doing a rifle attack on some of the transformers on that location. Fortunately, they didn't accumulate enough damage into the generators to get the thing to blow up. That was maybe a practice run. Maybe they'll come back next time with, a Barrett Light 50 and take it out in 4 or 5 rounds. So then there's EMP, and that's a standard one. They're getting nukes fine-tuned for maximum EMP creation. From a radio frequency standpoint, our national power grid, all these wires going everywhere, giant antennas to pick up that energy and just blow up transformers. So, there's the solar coronal mass ejection. And then there's just human error. I was down in San Diego probably 3-4 years ago for a while. And a guy in Arizona was changing a fuse on one of the big switching stations, transfer stations. And that took out power to, basically from south of Los Angeles all the way down into Mexico and east all the way, like, halfway through New Mexico. So human error can bring a power grid down in a pretty inconvenient time.
And you mentioned sabotage, but Janet Napolitano in her exit speech when she left DHS said that a cyber attack was basically imminent and that it's something that we should expect in the near future. I guess it was about 2 weeks ago that JP Morgan was hacked by sovereign actors, Russia.
Yeah. Well, yes. Hackers started out as, thrill seekers, and then they, when the criminals realized there was profit in it, then it became a profit deal. Now it's just another tool in the warfare box, and governments are pulling that out and they're using it. I can't remember where I read this, but it was along the lines of billions of dollars are hacked out of the major banks in the U.S. And I've seen some things where it's like, hey, my account, this can't be right. And the next day it's fixed. When I read that report, I thought, they're putting the money back in, because if everyone, that the bank is putting the money back in and just taking those losses, because if everyone knew that how vulnerable the bank accounts were, they wouldn't keep any money in there. And then the capital ratios of the banks would be turned upside down. Then we'd have another big run of the banks and another, 2008, 2009, all the banks are going to die. Now let's, give them another $10 billion or trillion dollars. So, yeah, it's a crazy world.
Can you explain to us in layman's terms how gasification works?
Okay. So any kind of a carbureted engine that normally runs on gasoline can be converted to run on wood gas. And so normally it takes gasoline in from the tank and it turns it into gas vapors, and that's what goes into the engine and burns. And so what we're providing is hydrogen, methane, little CO, gases that burn just as good as gasoline vapors, but don't come out of a gas can. They come out of wood or dried animal dung, or basically anything that you could pile up and burn like a campfire. You can use for this. And how this thing works, in the olden days, you'd seal up a can of wood with a hose coming out of it, and you just light a campfire underneath it. And it would heat up the wood, and the gas would be cooked out of the wood and go out that pipe, and you'd cool it down and filter it and run your engine. And the, that's great, and it's really simple. The problem with it is that you've expended all of the gas out of that, and you're left with just basically a bunch of charcoal that won't burn. And you've got to let the thing cool down, you've got to clean it out, and if you're running a vehicle on it, or you're running something that is, mission critical for anything, that's a tough thing to work around. So they, later on they invented, they upgraded to, a constant fueling, method called a downdraft gas fire. In that case, the wood that you're burning for heat and the wood that you're cooking the gas out of all go in the same chamber. And for us, we call that the reactor stage of the generator, of the gas fire. So little wood from wood pellet for pellet stoves, from as small as that up to, we recommend up to about maybe an inch. We say smaller than a golf ball. Chunked up wood. So not big logs, but chunked up wood. And you fill the hopper full. And you put the lid on, and there's a little ignition port that lets you light that wood at the very, very bottom of the pile. You get that lit, and you use a fan to, make it go faster, to basically get a big enough burn area in there. Close off that ignition port, and you use the fan to push the gas through the system. Initially, you're not creating wood gas. You're creating a little bit of wood gas, but you're mostly creating smoke. But as you use the fan to push that air down through that burn area and through at the bottom of the reactor, there's holes with a grill to keep the wood from falling through and just lets the gas through. It passes through there and onto the rest of the system. So the oxygen coming in causes that fire to grow up to a certain size. And the limit of that is the point at which you're using up all of the oxygen. There's nothing left. So the fire would like to get big enough to like burn all the wood all at one time, but there's not enough oxygen for that. So the fire stays at the bottom, and it cooks the wood above it. That methane, hydrogen, CO goes through the fire area, the burn area, without burning because there's no oxygen to bind with it to burn. And then we've got wood gas, but it's dirty wood gas. So the next thing we do is we extract the tars. And the most efficient way to extract tars is to condense them out of the air. So what we do is we put that through the next stage, and that's it's a water jacketed heat exchanger. So think of a kind of like an inside out radiator. You're putting the gas through the radiator, and you're surrounding it with water, and it transfers the heat into the water. And as that gas cools, any water vapor and all of the tar condense against the walls and flow downhill into a tar trap, a catch jar that we have. At that point, you've removed the tar, which would very quickly stop your engine from running. So that's a real important stage. The next stage is the final stage is the particle filter, and that's a three-stage filter. We don't ship them full of the media because it's just common stuff you buy at the hardware store. The bottom layer of the filter media is fiberglass insulation like you put in your roof. And then that's the bottom third. The middle third is, not vermiculite, but the, perlite. Perlite. It's a expanded volcanic glass that absorbs water, really well. But the middle is perlite. And then the top layer is, any kind of a very furry shredded material, like a reasonably fine sawdust. But the best thing we found as far as something easy to put away is that paper-based pet bedding they sell at PetSmart and other places. It's basically paper pet bedding for gerbils and those kinds of small animals are very furry and catch all the little particles awesome. You could make do with things like shredded toilet paper or, you know, anything that has little fine furry, you know, not ripped up newspaper, but, you know, something furry. And at that point, you're ready to mix it 50-50 with regular outside air, and your engine will run on that. So hopefully that was simple enough.
Ah, very cool, very cool. Now, why is Tactical part of your company name?
Well, my philosophy is you know, I want to take I put work into these designs. I want to be able to take it with me if I have to bug out. There's, you know, here in the Spokane, Washington area, it's been a pretty crazy weather pattern. June 22nd, and then two more times within the next 2 weeks, we had tornadoes, which we, you know, I initially said, hey, we never have those. But then I looked it up, and it's like, well, there have been some. It's just, you know, we'll, over the whole history of Washington's recorded weather, there's maybe, 15 tornadoes where, you know, some states will have that in one season. So it's just in living memory, you know, we're not used to these things. And they were knocking down power poles. They were knocking trees into houses, all kinds of crazy stuff. We had a pretty bad fire season. We had a kind of a wet spring. It stayed a little cooler, and plants grew. Basically, the stuff that dries out and becomes the fuel for the fires was twice as much as it used to be. So we had a lot of fires. We had a lot of things, you know, that would cause you to have to bug out. And so we said, let's design this in such a way that, you know, this whole system will fit. You know, like I said, when I'm running over to do a little local demo, and I want to, I like driving my truck, but I like 45 miles per gallon on my little diesel car, so I'll just put all that in the back seat of the car and run it out for a demo and then bring it back. So you don't need, if you have to bug out, it'll fit in a, you know, a small area. You know, I like that aspect of it.
And we're going to put a picture up of your big dragon. We're going to have that in the show notes today so people can go over to PrepperRecon.com and look at that. And, of course, that will link over to your site for folks to be able to buy that. Now, even the big dragon, which is your most expensive unit, still comes in at under $1,000. I think that's pretty reasonable.
Oh, it is. Initially, because, you know, I'm an engineer. I've got, you know, I've got a little bit of extra, you know, money at the end of the month. And I went to one of these prepper shows some time ago and said, hey, I got a book. Boy, that's a lot to figure out. Let me just go buy one and get started and then see what happens. And I couldn't find anything less than like $25,000. So basically, there was more recently I found one for like $4,000 or $5,000. These are beyond the range of most everyone, and it was way beyond what I was willing to put into it. And so we thought, you know, can we find a way to just crush the price on this to get it down to where, a person could add it into the budget, set aside, reasonable way and get the thing relatively quick. From the standpoint of having a generator, in our case, we slaughter hogs and cattle, and we make our own ham and bacon and summer sausage so between the multiple families that are involved with this, we have $10,000 or more of meat set aside in freezers that are designed to last a whole year. So, you know, if you've got $10,000 of meat protected by $1,000 of wood gas, as far as being able to run a long time without ever letting your freezer stop, that's a pretty wise investment. And then that pays for itself, I think, the first time you have a long power outage where you use it. And then everything after that is just, keeping the brooder lights on for the baby chicks so they don't die, during, certain parts of the year. Having a fan in the window when it's 100 degrees out, you know, the sun has gone down, you're trying to cool down the house. There's just a thousand different ways in which, you know, you add up all the little improvements in your life experience based on, you know, having something like this that is there and easy to use. You know, from it, I think it's definitely worth the money. I think that, you know, people are pretty excited about it. We're actually at this point, you know, barely keeping up with the orders. We've got a new shop that we're building. We're trying to get the roof on and waterproof before the rain's starting to fall. So we're really excited to pick this up and grow it through the winter.
And then you also sell generators, but you mentioned earlier that that you could run just about any generator off this. But the ones that you have, are they already adapted to just accept the hose from the wood gasifier?
Yeah. Early on, I had made the assumption, you know how it is, you assume that everyone's kind of like you a little bit. And so if I understood it, then other people did. And they looked at it and they just, you know, with words, telling someone how to modify a carburetor, how to mix the gas, wasn't working. And so we thought, well, let me just build an example. We'll bring it to one of the shows and we'll show them how, hey, just copy this. And, you know, it's like right away, it's like, oh, I just sold that generator. And I put a price on it. It's like, you know, I thought, oh, this is too high of a price. People are looking for something that is tried and true, hook it all together and it works. One nice thing about it is you get a generator that's a pretty small form factor, that is, you know, it's set up to run, wood gas, but it'll also run propane and natural gas if you need to. And people do like buying something. Hey, this thing end to end come from one place. If I need customer support, I don't have to mix up my generator guy with my wood gas guy. I've got one guy to call and say, hey, I'm confused about something. Help me run through the startup and routine of the system.
Yeah, that's great because there's a lot of people out there that are like me. And when it comes to, you know, being mechanically inclined, if you're talking about turning on and off a light switch, I'm really good at that. But beyond that, I really start getting lost easy. So that's great. Now, give us an idea how many things we could run off of the Big Dragon and the 6.5 horsepower generator.
Okay, so it's, you know, ideally you're running the thing with a battery bank. You're charging a battery bank with this and an inverter powering thing. So what with us and our four golf cart batteries, or they could be four just 12-volt deep cycle marine. We on the power outage we had on the first tornado, it was hot. It was like nearly 100 degrees, and we watched the temperatures of the freezer was going up fast. So we immediately hooked up to that, and we were able to run that about 12 hours. But and it took about 2.5 hours with this gas fire and generator to recharge that battery bank. And that was with, let's see, three deep chest freezers, so three big full-size freezers and two refrigerators. And that, you know, say twice a day. So that's about 4 hours of running a day. Kept three freezers and two refrigerators running constantly. And you could be less conservative than that. You don't have to have it plugged in all the time. You can get it to a deep freeze and then let it coast, you know, with it for a little while. So you could cut that in half. But if you wanted to, you know, be, you know, say you got medicines or you got things that really have to stay frozen. With that system, it's not a whole house generator. And the wants versus the needs, you're going to figure out what you really need. But, you know, three freezers and two fridges is an awful lot of need covered. And most people don't have that much need. If you've got more than that, then you probably want to have someone dedicated to, you know, doing 4 or 5, 6 hours of generator run a day, with this to keep up with it. So we, you know, and that was a homestead, we didn't stop manufacturing during that phase. So it was a homestead plus a small business that, was run on wood gas, with that generator and that gas fire.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, can you tell the folks where they can find your site if they'd like to purchase one of these? We're going to have links, but we've got folks listening on YouTube and Stitcher that may not actually be at the site to click through. So let those folks know where they can find you.
Okay. Our website is tacticalwoodgas.com. You can get to me, Mike, at tacticalwoodgas.com, or you can get to Kelly Sales at tacticalwoodgas.com. We've got a Facebook page, so if you go to Facebook and you just search on Tactical Wood to Gas, you'll find us. And you'll see the progress we're making on the pool building out back. And there's one thing we haven't talked about is we've got some pictures of the garden in there. Since we started doing this, one of the byproducts of this system is biochar. So the wood at the fire at the bottom cooking the wood above it turns that into biochar. And for us, we looked at it and said, well, that's probably good in the garden. We just throw it in the garden. We started doing that last fall. This year, what normally are 10-pound pumpkins are 40 pounds. Our tomatoes just blew up. We have no idea what to do with all these tomatoes. All the squash, basically, for free as a natural byproduct, you get biochar. So you'll find that stuff on Facebook. And then we've got an 800 number, 800-516-4249. And then we also have a YouTube channel if you look up Tactical Wood Gas.
Very cool. Mike, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. We're trying to help people out, so give us a call if we can help you with the power needs.
Detroit High Priority 911 calls average 58 minutes for a response. How much longer will it be until budget cuts, natural disaster, or a total collapse make you responsible for your own security? The new book, Retreat Security and Small Unit Tactics by David Kobler and Mark Goodwin, will teach you how to organize your team or neighborhood into a force to be reckoned with. You'll get tips to harden your home and protect your family, life, and property, both now and after the stuff hits the fan. Retreat Security and Small Unit Tactics is available in paperback, Kindle, and audio editions. Buy it from Amazon.com before it's too late.